Welcome, welcome to another episode. With our holiday in the middle of the summit, Happy New Year 2018 in Ethiopia. So let's look at some of the highlights from this summit that's happening in Addis Ababa.
It's time. The 2025 CARICOM Africa Summit in Addis Ababa was a landmark moment in transcontinental diplomacy, but more importantly, it was a spiritual and strategic reunion. Leaders from Africa and the Caribbean gathered not just to exchange policy ideas, but to reaffirm a shared identity rooted in history, struggle, and the pursuit of justice. The speeches delivered were rich with symbolism, urgency, and vision, and they laid the groundwork for a new era of cooperation. Dr. Carla Barnett, Secretary General of CARICOM, opened the summit with a deeply resonant message. She described the gathering as a homecoming, a phrase that carried emotional weight. Barnett emphasized that despite centuries of separation through slavery, colonialism, and geopolitical fragmentation, the Caribbean and Africa remain connected through an enduring spirit and shared heritage. Her speech was not just ceremonial. It was a declaration that the diaspora is not peripheral to Africa, but an extension of it. She also highlighted the operationalization of the CARICOM Memorandum of Understanding, which includes initiatives like HEDPAC, Health Development Partnership for Africa and the Caribbean, signaling that this partnership is not just symbolic, but functional. Prime Minister Terence Drew of St. Kitts and Nevis, the incoming chair of CARICOM, delivered one of the summit's most memorable metaphors. He urged that the Atlantic slave trade be reimagined as the Atlantic Bridge, a bridge of hope, advancement, and rightful place in the global order. This reframing was powerful. It turned a symbol of trauma into a platform for transformation. Drew's speech was a call to action for reparatory justice, economic cooperation, and cultural restoration. He made it clear that the diaspora must not only remember its past, but leverage it to build a future of dignity and prosperity. President João Lourenço of Angola, chairperson of the African Union, emphasized the importance of unity and multilateral action. He spoke of the need to reform global financial architecture and to ensure that Africa and the Caribbean speak with one voice on the international stage. His remarks were grounded in pragmatism, urging that the summit's declarations be translated into policy and implementation. Lourenço's speech was a reminder that solidarity must be institutionalized, not just celebrated. Now, let's turn to the Addis Ababa Declaration itself. This document is the summit's cornerstone. It enshrines principles of sovereignty, territorial integrity, non-interference, and good neighborliness, core tenets of the United Nations Charter. But it goes further. It establishes a transcontinental partnership on reparatory justice for Africans and people of African descent. This is not just a diplomatic gesture. It's a moral and political commitment to address the legacies of slavery, colonialism, and systemic exclusion. Why is this important? Because it reframes the relationship between Africa and its diaspora from one of nostalgia to one of agency. The declaration recognizes diasporians not as outsiders looking in, but as stakeholders in Africa's future. It calls for coordinated efforts on reparations, cultural restoration, and economic empowerment. It also reaffirms the UN Security Council's role in maintaining peace and stability, acknowledging that both regions face shared threats in an increasingly volatile world. For diasporians in the West, the benefits of this declaration are profound. First, it offers a political anchor, a formal recognition of their historical and cultural ties to Africa. Second, it opens pathways for economic collaboration, investment, and mobility. Initiatives like the Afreximbank's Caribbean headquarters and the Afro-Caribbean Trade and Investment Forum are tangible outcomes that can reshape access to capital and markets. Third, it provides a platform for advocacy. With Africa and the Caribbean speaking in unison, diasporians gain a stronger voice in global forums, from climate negotiations to human rights debates. In essence, the Addis Ababa Declaration is a blueprint for transcontinental renaissance. It's a document that doesn't just look backward at injustice, it looks forward to restoration. The speeches at the summit were not mere rhetoric. They were declarations of intent. If followed through, they could redefine what it means to be African in the 21st century, whether on the continent or across the diaspora. This summit was not just a diplomatic event. It was a spiritual reckoning, a strategic alignment, and a promise to future generations that the past will not be forgotten and that the future will be built together.
That is wonderful, wonderful updates, wonderful updates. Well, let's keep it going with the medical breakthrough.
This breakthrough is one of those rare moments where science feels like magic. Researchers have developed a modified glue gun that can 3D print bone-like material directly onto fractures during surgery. That means instead of waiting days or weeks for custom bone implants to be manufactured, surgeons can now create and apply grafts in real time, right in the operating room. It's fast, it's precise, and it's potentially life-changing. You should know about this because it could affect you or someone you care about. Whether it's a sports injury, a car accident, or age-related bone degeneration, fractures are incredibly common. Traditional treatments often involve metal plates or donor bone, which can be invasive, slow to heal, and not always a perfect fit. This new glue gun technology uses a filament made of hydroxyapatite, a natural bone component, and polycaprolactone, a biocompatible thermoplastic. Together, they form a graft that's not only structurally sound, but also promotes healing and reduces inflammation. Imagine a future where broken bones are repaired in minutes, not hours. Where the graft conforms perfectly to the shape of the fracture, even if it's irregular or complex. That's what this innovation offers. It's especially useful for emergency surgeries or cases where preoperative imaging and modeling aren't feasible. And because the device is compact and manually operated, surgeons can adjust the angle, depth, and direction of the graft on the fly. This could change society in profound ways. First, it democratizes access to advanced surgical care. Smaller hospitals or clinics that don't have expensive 3D printing labs could still perform high-quality bone repairs. Second, it reduces recovery time and complications, which means fewer hospital stays and lower healthcare costs. Third, it opens the door to similar technologies for other tissues. Imagine glue guns for cartilage, tendons, or even organs. Another important detail is safety. The glue gun operates at a temperature low enough to avoid damaging surrounding tissue, and the graft material can be customized for hardness and flexibility depending on the location in the body. That level of control is rare in surgical tools and makes this device incredibly versatile. In short, this isn't just a cool gadget, it's a paradigm shift. It's a glimpse into a future where surgery is faster, safer, and more personalized. And it's a reminder that innovation doesn't always come in the form of giant machines or billion-dollar labs. Sometimes it looks like a glue gun, and it changes everything.
Hey, we on a roll. Let's keep it up. Let's see how Japan is helping clean up things.
Japan's unveiling of the world's first commercial ammonia-powered ship engine is a seismic shift in how we think about global transport and climate action. This isn't just an engineering breakthrough. It's a blueprint for how entire industries can pivot towards sustainability without sacrificing performance. The ammonia engine, developed by Japan Engine Corporation, has achieved something extraordinary: a reduction of over 90% in greenhouse gas emissions compared to traditional heavy fuel oil engines. That's not a marginal improvement, it's a revolution. The listener should know this because maritime shipping is one of the largest contributors to global emissions, accounting for nearly 3% of the world's greenhouse gases. These emissions often go unnoticed because they happen out at sea, far from urban centers. But they have a massive impact on climate change, ocean health, and air quality. By introducing a dual-fuel engine that runs on ammonia, a fuel that doesn't emit CO2 when burned, Japan is showing that it's possible to decarbonize even the most entrenched sectors of the global economy. This matters not just for environmentalists or engineers, but for everyone. If you live near a port city, cleaner ships mean better air quality. If you work in logistics, this technology could reshape supply chains. If you care about climate justice, this is a step toward reducing the disproportionate impact of pollution on vulnerable communities. And if you're a policymaker or investor, this is a signal that green innovation is no longer theoretical. It's commercially viable and ready to scale. The societal implications are enormous. Imagine a world where cargo ships no longer belch toxic fumes into the atmosphere, where the shipping lanes that connect continents also connect us to a cleaner future. This engine could catalyze a wave of innovation across industries, from aviation to agriculture, by proving that alternative fuels can be safe, efficient, and scalable. It also sets a precedent for international regulation. If one country can lead with this kind of technology, others will follow and global standards will shift. Another important detail is the rigorous testing and certification that went into this engine. It wasn't rushed to market. It underwent over 700 hours of performance testing, leak prevention protocols, and safety inspections. Nitrous oxide emissions were measured at just 3 ppm, and unburned ammonia was virtually eliminated thanks to post-combustion systems. That level of precision and care means this isn't just a prototype, it's a reliable, deployable solution. In short, this ammonia engine isn't just a technical achievement, it's a moral one. It shows that with enough vision and investment, we can tackle climate change at its industrial roots. It's a reminder that the future isn't something we wait for, it's something we build. And Japan just laid down one of the first bricks.
Last but not least, the Queen Anne.
The Queen reigns. This story about the Iberian harvester ant queen, Messer Ibericus, is one of the most mind-bending discoveries in biology in recent years. It's not just about ants. It's about rewriting the rules of how life works. Scientists have found that this queen can produce male offspring that belong to an entirely different species, Messer structor. That's not a hybrid, not a mutation, but a full-blown member of another species. This phenomenon, now being called xenoparity, challenges the very definition of what a species is and how reproduction is supposed to function. You should know this because it touches on something fundamental. The boundaries of biology that we thought were fixed are not. For centuries, we've operated under the assumption that a female can only produce offspring of her own species. This ant queen defies that. She can clone males of another species, use them to mate, and produce hybrid workers. It's a reproductive strategy so complex and precise that it borders on science fiction. And yet, it's happening in nature right now. This discovery could help the listener and people they know by expanding our understanding of genetics, evolution, and even biotechnology. If nature can engineer such a system, where one organism can control the reproduction of another species, what does that mean for synthetic biology, for conservation, or for medicine? It opens doors to new ways of thinking about genetic inheritance, species boundaries, and the potential for controlled hybridization. It also raises ethical questions about how we define individuality and autonomy in living systems. Society could be changed by this in subtle but profound ways. First, it forces scientists to reconsider the definition of a species. If two organisms that diverged over 5 million years ago can still interact reproductively in such a controlled way, then our taxonomic categories may be too rigid. Second, it shows that evolution isn't just about survival, it's about strategy. This ant queen has essentially domesticated another species to serve her colony's needs. That's not just adaptation, it's manipulation. It mirrors human behavior in agriculture and animal husbandry, suggesting that intelligence and control can emerge in unexpected places. Another important detail is that this isn't a one-off anomaly. Researchers found colonies where all the worker ants were hybrids of M. Ibericus and M. structor, even in regions where M. structor males don't naturally exist. That means the queen isn't just mating with nearby males. She's producing them herself, cloning them, and using them to perpetuate her colony. It's a closed-loop system of reproductive control that's never been seen before in the animal kingdom. In short, this ant queen isn't just breaking the rules. She's rewriting them. And in doing so, she's giving us a glimpse into the hidden complexity of nature, where boundaries blur and biology bends in ways we're only beginning to understand. This isn't just a story about ants. It's a story about possibility.
It's always a pleasure when we get together. And until next time, when we meet at the crossroads. Peace.